Hello and welcome to the ARCOP podcast for September 2025 with me, James Jenkins, Head of Customer Development, and Matt Cook, ARCOP General Manager. Okay, and we're live. Matt, we are just under a month away from the summit. So yeah, good to talk to you again. How are you keeping?
I'm doing well and I can't wait. There's a pub in London that I really like to visit every time I come. So I'm counting down the days until I can show my face again in that spot.
Fantastic. I think I know the one that you mean, off Leadenhall Street down an alleyway. It's
That's
very,
correct.
very historic pub. Yes, I know it probably too well, I have to admit. So very good. Okay, so what I thought we'd do today, Matt, is we've got the summits coming up, just as a reminder. So 14th in Dublin and then on the 16th in London at the NED. Hopefully everybody's got the time set aside. There will be some emails coming out with a no before you go. We want you to have a great easy experience where you learn a great deal, come and have some fun, talk about 3DS normal format. I think everybody will get will take away a lot from it, so very much looking forward to that. And the main focus as ever will be on 3DS. So what I thought we would do today, Matt, is maybe elevate the conversation to give some context around 3DS and maybe talk about some more like industry trends, and then how we're seeing 3DS payments and also ARCOP's role in that broader context. But if you remember last month, we started off talking about use cases for AI, and I thought we could revisit that and see if twice is not a trend, but let's see if it takes off. So I will start, maybe give you time to think, any uses that you've been using for AI in the last month. Mine, I have to say, has been voice. So rather than, I know you listen to a lot of podcasts in the car. I confess, I listen to kind of radio stations and music still. But I have been using like ChatGPT and Grok to have detailed conversations with. Now, it may be, you probably want to hear that it's something profound, but I have to be honest, it's normally just 3D secure, fraud and risk. But you can have detailed conversations with it. So that's kind of been what I've been using AI for recently. What about yourself, Matt?
So interestingly, I mostly the one that I've been the most interested in recently is education, using it as an AI tutor, if you will. And so I still have high school age children, which is around 17. And so he's taken a couple courses, and we set out to build an AI agent that would help you to learn the knowledge necessary in the shortest amount of time possible. And it's really been fascinating because you can start to tell it that you want quiz you interactively, and based upon your responses, make the next question harder or easier. And take one at a time, and every time you answer correctly, give a little description as to why you're correct, and why if you answer incorrectly, similar thing. And you just keep going, and if it's too easy, you just write, make it more difficult, and they make it more difficult. And it's been pretty fascinating. I keyed off, there's a great thing if people want to look into it. It's called alpha.school, and it is a school in Austin, Texas, that has no teachers. They only have an AI teacher or curriculum, if you will. And they have the adults in the building are coaches, and they coach the kids on how best to take advantage of the AI resources that they have. And these kids are absolutely killing the standardized testing here in the States, which is they're testing at the top, one percentile of their age group. There's these things called AP tests, which are advanced placement tests. They're, knocking it out of the park with like 90% of the students getting a 5, which means you don't even have to take the course in university or college. So it's, I think things are fundamentally changing in the way that people learn information. And it's pretty interesting to see it taking hold at the youth level.
Yeah, very interesting. I was you'd mentioned that to me on this podcast before, and we've been using it with our daughter. The AI, it's just incredible just how quickly they can take a subject they don't understand, and you can watch the light bulb go on very, very quickly. We haven't used it for that test scenario that you're talking about, but I think we will be doing very shortly. So
we may want to maybe we deploy some form of test at the summit, and people have to use AI to build their foundational knowledge of 3D Secure and the overall payment ecosystem.
Exactly, in order to enable entry to the
Yeah,
site as
right.
well.
Something like that.
There we
Yeah.
go. There we go.
Yeah.
So linked to that then. So using the that kind of like, the test analogy then. So if people are using this technology to become smarter, obviously we're on the good side, we hope, but there's bad actors out there using increasingly to commit fraud, right, and theft and steal, which brings us into kind of your vision around the smart rule set and using these kind of tools to offset those bad actors. And as we go through this, I mean, we say it every month, just the idea that we wouldn't use this technology when, the bad actors are increasingly use it is, I don't think it's really credible now. So we want to move very, very fast. And we have this date of October 28th. We'll talk about it on the summit as well. But any guidance and updates on smart rule set before we get into some industry trends?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is, and maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit on your industry trends, is as a consumer or as a cardholder, I'm increasingly dissatisfied with the way that things are working. Spam is out of control, fraudsters attacking me left and right. My SMS is becoming like, my iMessages. It's becoming a channel that's now polluted. It used to be, my SMS or text message channel used to be one that was a priority, and it was everything that came to me was direct to me, and I usually from a person that I know, and I wanted to respond quickly and be super responsive. And now it's just becoming like my email. It's email's been ruined for who knows for years, in terms of spam and just things, newsletters, just things that just keep coming. And now my SMS is becoming similar, but a lot of it is fraudsters, and it's just it's a bit out of control. And then and I'm also, I'll say, increasingly dissatisfied with some of the cards that I use because of false declines. Now, because of this, just explosion in fraudulent activity over digital channels, now everyone has to play more defense and has to assume the worst on any sort of transaction that maybe is slightly out of sync with the historical pattern. And I'm getting a lot of false declines, and it's kind of driving me nuts. And it's driving me, I'll be honest, to the card that does it least. It used to be I would use the card that offered me the most rewards and points and all that, but I got frustrated with the false declines. So now I've migrated to the one that probably gives me the least amount of points, to be honest. However, it just works. It just works. Everywhere I go, the card just works. And that's the one that now is top of wallet for me. So, as I start to think about the role of AI, if that's my backdrop, we have these systems. I worry that the systems we have in place today are just not adequate or not performing in the way that they should. With the technology and the advances and things like AI that we're seeing over the last couple of years, all these false declines shouldn't, the prevalence of them shouldn't be that high. It just shouldn't be that high. And so, as we think about what's our role in this world, we're definitely trying to harness this technology in a way that delivers a tremendous amount of value for our customers. And the way in which we measure that value is A, being able to stop fraud, which, it doesn't really help with the false decline problem, but B is that increase authentication success rate is what the measure that we use, which does directly impact that false decline rate. So we think that we've got algorithms based upon the amount of data that we have, and we've packaged it up and we call it smart rule set to do both those things, to reduce false declines while keeping fraud the same or even in most cases reducing it. So that's the way of thinking about that broader picture of how do we leverage AI to deliver more value to our customers, and we're calling it smart rule set.
Yeah, I think it's certainly so. When you do take it up a level, it does drop into really one of those two categories, isn't it? It's the fraud prevention, which should work well, but doesn't always and clearly isn't when it's impacting genuine cardholders, right? Your transactions. And then you've got that kind of challenge experience, which ideally we want to minimize. And I always, we go to these conferences, people still talk about like the Uber experience, right? Of being like the optimal experience. I remember the first time I did it, I was like, how do I pay? It's like, you get out. I was like, well, I just get out and it pays. Now, not every transaction can have that use case because it doesn't involve location. But the ideal is there's no decline and really there's no challenge. And I thought we were getting closer to that. The problem is, I think, is with bad actors using all this technology around AI, is the banks really have got no other option unless they're leveraging all the data available, is to kind of slam the brakes on, challenge more, decline more. And that's becoming, and then once you do, if you are declined, when you call the bank, we now have the problem then of how do we actually authenticate? And there's been a lot in the press around, voice and ID, and how do we actually prove that it's you on the end of the line post false decline? So maybe we start with both of those then. So at an industry level, what do you think around the challenge rates and then the challenge mechanism? Maybe we start there. What do you think is happening in terms of the trend of that customer experience?
Yeah, so I think my observation is a lot of the European banks are now moving more towards an increase in the challenge rate is okay. And historically, I've been on the side, I will be honest, of less friction is always better. However, now I believe that the authentication methods, the challenge, and being able to do things like out-of-band authentication through the card issuing app, and doing things like that now allow us to, well, I'll say the cardholder and all of us have been conditioned, whether we like it or not, that multi-factor authentication is part of our life. It's part of our life, and so you have to figure out how to do it well. And I think most people have figured out how to do it well because, just the repetitive nature of continuously authenticating means that you learn how to do it really, really quickly, and you actually don't view it as much of a hassle as you used to because it pretty much works all the time. So, I'm starting to see in a lot of issuers leaning more towards let's just challenge more because it doesn't disrupt our cardholders as much as it used to, and it really allows us to deflect the fraudsters in an intelligent manner. So that's the way I see it. And back on this, I will guarantee these fraudsters are absolutely using AI systems to orchestrate their strategies. It's just guaranteed. I mean, and now we as suppliers to a bunch of the issuers, and we're not alone, it's I'll call on the whole industry here, have to be smarter than the fraudsters are at using these systems and using these technologies for to achieve the objectives we want, which is low fraud, high approvals. And I think that it's possible. I mean, and what we're doing with Smart Rule Set actually proves that it's possible because we have the data to prove it, and we can show exactly how much fraud we're able to avoid and what the impact is on friction and challenge approval or in authorization authenticate success rates, excuse me.
Yeah, interesting. And we do talk about this a lot, that nobody has the complete picture, right? Everybody has part of it. But when you look at, let's say, I spend a lot of time with merchants, and we'll have a lot of the summit as well. We'll have merchants presenting and speaking at the summits, which hopefully is interesting. But we have merchants sitting on a lot of data, quite often with a network of merchants with a long profile of that cardholder and that customer that's in the merchant space. And then when you combine that with the schemes, who, by the way, will also be presenting, we believe, at the summit, with their data, and then combine it with the issuer and the RCOT network across thousands of issuers, the idea is that we can get as close, I think, to a complete picture as we could realistically hope for. We just know these need those systems to be integrated. And really, that's the idea behind the 3DS protocol, is that it can be now seen, I think, as a platform where that data can be shared in real time. Now, if you look at that, if that's the end state, as much as we can tell, when we look at those issuer rules in the ACS and in the RCOT system, would we really realistically want them to be managed by an individual or a small group of people? And would we want them to be static? The answer to that is no, right? I think that's the whole background behind the smart rule set, is that issuers can have their own policies, but they can lean increasingly on us because the threats that are coming in are so much more sophisticated, so much more frequent. I think we need an additional tool, and that's kind of the background to the smart rule set. So I think.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'd just say in reaction to that is It doesn't have to be all or nothing, right? It can
Right.
be. I think we've come, we were at a point where the bulk of the rule sets in on the archive network, which were created by humans, and then augmented by smart technology. And I think we've just flipped that. And I think that the right answer is that the foundational rule set should be made by, should be managed by an AI. And then, but humans should be able to tweak those where their knowledge actually yields a better result. And there are some of those. There are some of those instances now. But I would say, on the whole, that foundation better be based on technology, not about some person being able to look at a bunch of data and see some signal and make a change to the rule set. Because that's just, it's just, you can't keep up. You just can't keep up. It's just not going to work.
No, you can't. You can't have a human being trying to fight these machines. It's just not gonna. It's not gonna
Yeah,
work.
not gonna
No,
work.
it's not. They set the policies. Okay, very good. So we've got a few more minutes left, Matt. I thought.
By the way, real quick, can I just
Oh
jump
yeah,
back?
of
One
course.
thing made me think of I saw some sort of meme. I don't know where it was, but it was about how people who use some sort of AI system, whether it be ChatGPT or Grok or Gemini or Claude, whatever it may be, to write something. And then then they email that summary to somebody who has a little AI assistant in their email box who's summarizing the document. And then they use an AI assistant to then write a reply to the email that they received. And all of a sudden you have, it's basically AI systems talking to AI systems. And what it made me think too, it's the same thing with fraudsters using AI and then the issuers themselves also leveraging AI. So it becomes these dueling AI systems. And whoever has the most data and the most intelligence and the best approach is going to win. And that's the way we think that this is going to evolve, or already is evolving, to be honest. And we want to be on the right side of that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you need the same. You certainly need to counterbalance that level of attack coming from AI. I mean, really, you want the balance tipped in your favor, but you don't want to be just leveraging old technology to state the obvious. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
interesting. Okay, so we've got a few more minutes left, Matt. In terms of the broader picture, then, so we talked about their kind of the customer experience, where we think the market's going, and we talked about the clearly on the fraud prevention, the smart rule set. The industry itself, there's a few big topics coming downstream. So we talk about, for example, like digital currencies, crypto, open banking. We could talk for hours about this stuff. But if there's one or two things as you look out at this business that you think is going to impact it, I mean, what would they be? And then, maybe to close out, how are you thinking about addressing those, or even leveraging those as opportunities for Arcot and our customers?
Yeah, I think I may have referenced this in a past podcast, but it's been a while, so I don't think it'll hurt to repeat myself. It makes me think of a dinner that we had a few years ago now with one of the large UK issuers, who and the gentleman who we were having dinner with was had also been involved in the open banking initiative for that bank. And we had a big conversation like, why hasn't open banking taken off? And as it turns out, these card networks that we're all involved in have tuned the incentives for every stakeholder to such an extent that it's all of the ancillary services that are built on top of the payment. It's fraud checking and prevention. It's chargebacks when there's issues. All the interchange incentives that are aligned across all the stakeholders. And open banking didn't have a lot of that. It didn't have a lot of that. And it was, once the money gets moved out of someone's account, there's no getting it back. There's no chargeback mechanism. There's all sorts of things that hadn't evolved at the time and were preventing widespread adoption. And so I think we're at a similar point with a lot of what we see with, stable coins and that payment infrastructure is that there are indeed emerging pockets of usage. However, without that, all those ancillary services, authentication, authorization systems and fraud prevention and detection and all the wallet integration or whatever, payment integration with the merchants, and even the incentives for the cardholders to use the card in the form of rewards and points, like all of these things, ability to use credit. There's all sorts of things that don't exist in other areas. So I would think that if a payment ecosystem were going to be successful, that you'd have to have all those things in place. And it's just going to take a while. Maybe it'll happen, and maybe cards will get disrupted over time. It's possible, but I just don't see it in the near term. But I could, because of all those ancillary services, and so and the alignment of incentives. Like no one in the current card system, cardholders included, are really incented to do anything other than keep using the existing system, because you get these rewards and you get 2-3 percentage point rewards on everything you purchase. Why would you use anything else? Why would you use anything else?
Yeah, it's interesting because the setup of, I'll just call it, the networks has been there since what, the 50s, arguably, and it's been layered upon, layered upon, and they, there is a lot of value that they bring, and even just down to things like you mentioned, like the points, there's also like regulation, and even like down to ubiquitous acceptance, if you can put it that way. I mean, the fact if you have a branded card in your pocket, you can shop pretty much anywhere in the world and it will be accepted, is yeah, it's amazing, really. Do you think then that some of these, I don't want to lead the witness, would like your view on this, that some of these technologies that are emerging, if they're not necessarily going to stand alone, do you think they'll be absorbed by some of the networks and used to bolster? We're seeing some of that, aren't we?
Yeah, I would guarantee. I mean, you see it. I've seen it. Visa and MasterCard are absolutely involved in stablecoins today. So they are absolutely have teams of people looking at crypto networks, making sure that they don't get disrupted. And so they're involved. And of course, they would like to continue to be the payment rails. Whether or not it's stablecoin or whether or not it's a card payment, they want to be the infrastructure that moves that. Moves those digital bits around, I'll say it that way.
Yeah.
So I think that they're absolutely involved. But again, I think the current setup has incentive structure such that it just works better than the alternative today. Now, that could change. And I have my mind open. Disruptive, the world is littered with disruptive technologies and incumbents who thought that their stuff was better. I mean, I get it. So it's not a na I'm not saying that naively, but I do think it's going to take quite a bit of time. And just based on my observation of open banking, where fees were considered to be lower, yet adoption was almost zero, it tells you something. It tells you that if incentives aren't in place, that people mass widespread adoption is unlikely to occur.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Now, if you look back where I do think, where you flip it, you look at a very clear Western Union, right? Moving money from one part of the world to another using Western Union, huge fees, huge amounts of fraud, all sorts of stuff. Or sending a stable coin via a digital wallet over the internet, like, yeah, that seems a lot more convenient. It seems a lot more convenient. Rather than paying a bunch of fees, you pay almost nothing, and you can send it across border and there's no problems. Makes a lot of sense to me. But using it to buy something at an e-commerce shop, I don't know. It just, why would I do that instead of just use my card and get my 3% reward?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, there's lots of, it will be fascinating over the next, well, as ever, to see how these different emerging technologies fit in into the current ecosystem we have. And then there'll always be a need, I think we can agree on that, to authenticate. And so we're pretty confident there'll always be a need for 3DS in some shape or form to be part of that broader ecosystem. And yeah, I think we'll, it's part of the reason we'd like these conversations, and also conversations like we'll have at the summit as well, because I'm sure everybody will have a view and would be interested in that as
It's
well.
hard to see. It's hard to see how a payment ecosystem could be successful without authentication.
Yeah.
I mean, authentication is just one of those things that for a payment ecosystem to be successful, you got to do it.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they're built on trust. The whole thing's built on trust. So yeah, fascinating. Okay, very good. Well, I think we're at time, Matt. Any closing comments other than obviously we're looking forward to the summit?
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's on the fence, you should come because it's going to be a good day. We got a good plan. Just reviewed the agenda. I think it'll be good content. We'll have plenty of time for socialization also. So I think it'll be a good day. Right? Looking forward to both the day in Dublin and the day in London. I think both are going to be really, really good.
Fantastic. Great. All right. Well, we'll leave it there, Matt. Appreciate your time as ever and look forward to seeing everybody at the summits and if not speaking before. So thanks again. We'll leave it there.